Okay, now this series of messages on the Sermon of the Mount, in private, I consider these a whole range of hot potatoes that many well-meaning Christian ministers avoid. Why? Well, they're awkward. They make harsh demands that are seen as culturally inappropriate to the average Aussie. Yet, I make no apology for sharing with you the clear teaching that Jesus gave his disciples about what he expected of them. Now, I suspect it was just as awkward then as it is now, which suggests that we need to be open and honest about what it says and what it means for us. Because this passage, you've already realised, is about marriage, adultery, divorce, and vows. And yep, it all applies to us. Now, after I finished this message, I was reading the computer, told me that in the year of 2021, marked the highest number of divorces in Australia since 1976. Some useless information for you. There were 56,244 opting for divorce in that year. Yeah. Now, it went on to say, why did these relationships break down? Well, hurt and resentment. No hope for a future. And it went on to give you seven questions to ask if you're considering divorce. Now, I might come back to those at the end, but you can just think about what are the good reasons for divorce? Well, let's go back a couple of spaces and say, well, what does Jesus say about this? Well, last week, when I drove across the country, a mere 4,000 kilometres, on my own, I had plenty of time to think. I was thinking about my son who just got married in Japan, which I was there for as well, which was another great holiday. Not only do they get married in Japan, but I'm organising a wedding for them here in Australia as well, for all the people that couldn't go to Japan for it. Great idea. Well, if that wasn't enough, this week I was hit with the news that my daughter has decided that she wants to get married next month. And after a long time recovering from a divorce. Now, and this is all happening in my life while my other son is still in the middle of a very distressing court battle with his ex-wife. So what does all this have to do with family life? Everything. Yeah, it seems that my whole life is caught up with that. And I don't know whether God works that way in your life, but the things I preach about, usually it's not about preaching about what I think you need, it's about God's trying to tell me what I need. So it's always a bit of a worry when God puts all those things happening in my life at the same time as putting me into a place where this is the next sermon I preach in this series. Go figure. Yes, it applies to me, but I also think it applies to our whole culture and society. So let's have a look at what it says to us. I doubt whether last time I preached this message, and I can't even remember, I didn't bother to check whether I'd preached. I definitely have preached from it before, but I don't know what I said. And I don't think I connected these three parts of this passage together. But I'd like to suggest to you that this three sections is all about marriage. The first section is adultery, the threat to marriage. The next one is divorce, the end of marriage. And then there's this curious bit tacked onto the end about vows and oaths, which I've suggested to you are the keys to a long and successful marriage. So, these are difficult topics. Jesus doesn't pull any punches. So, I won't either. And I've suggested that if you looked at the way I've titled this particular message, it's the whole family life. We're continually, and particularly part of our own culture and society, we're always looking for loopholes or to put up a smoke screen to make it a bit cloudy. We don't quite understand this. We don't have to deal with it. But people use all these things to ignore adultery, ignore the vows that they've made, rather than recognise their responsibility to take drastic, painful action to restore relationships. So, firstly, adultery. When was the last time you heard the word adultery not in a church? It's not in our common language at all, is it? We would rather choose much less derogatory terms. Wouldn't you, Les?
Aye.
Wouldn't you?
What?
Would you use the word adultery?
No, I'm divorced. I'm for a Christian girl.
Right. Now, if we don't use this word adultery, what words would you use?
Affair.
Ah, he had an affair. Pretty innocuous statement, isn't it? What else would we say?
Unfaithful.
Yeah, he or she was unfaithful. Well, what does that actually mean? It's a bit cloudy sort of a term. What other ones come up?
She moved on.
Yeah.
Grown apart.
What else was on my list? It was just a moment of weakness. A bit on the side. Oh, no, it's okay. We have an open marriage, whatever that means. And of course, all of these are just excuses to avoid saying what it really is. We could always find a good reason for it, of course. Oh, I had a lot to drink that night. I just don't know how it happened. Well, yes, right. So what is adultery? The way Jesus used the term? It's obviously about any sex outside of a marriage relationship. It's quite interesting in Eugene Peterson's translation, The Message. He says, he translates it as, don't go to bed with another spouse. But Jesus doesn't leave it there. He recognises where all this starts. And so Eugene says, but don't think you preserved your virtue simply by staying out of bed. Your heart can be corrupted even quicker than your body. Those leering looks that you took, and thinking nobody noticed, they also corrupt. So, don't think you preserve your virtue by staying out of bed. Your heart's already done it. The fact is, we live in a culture and a society which has decided that sex sells everything. They've got very good at using sex-based advertising to increase your desire and minimise the repercussions, because everybody does it. But the reality is that sex outside of marriage undermines trust, sows seeds of betrayal, and it effectively breaks the marriage vows. Now, we may be very good at rationalising, and we start out saying, oh, it's okay to look as long as I don't touch, but before we realise it, we've crossed the line. Jesus says, if we look lustfully, we're already guilty. If we allow our minds to dwell on the possibilities, we've already done it in our hearts. So, does that mean that there is no hope for us? No, it doesn't mean that at all. But it does mean that drastic action is required. Jesus says, if your right eye is the problem, gouge it out and throw it away. If your right hand is the problem, cut it off, throw it away. Why? Well, if you allow your body to do what it wants, because of your own lack of discipline, you will end up in hell. Well, that's simply what it says. You know, I can't sugarcoat that. That's what it says. It says, better to deal with it first than to suffer that fate. Now, I don't believe we should interpret this literally, although some well-meaning Christians in the past have indeed done that. But, you know, and I don't believe that we should interpret liberty, because otherwise we'd all end up one-eyed and one-armed. But yes, it is meant to shock us into taking decisive, even painful action, because to continue to go where you're heading, not just it doesn't affect just your life in this world, but in eternity. Because it also will lead to divorce and leads to eternal separation from God. So, are we prepared to take that sort of action to protect against this threat to your marriage? That's something for you to think about. Because if you're not prepared to at least consider that and to take that sort of directed action, this passage would seem to suggest that divorce is the end of marriage. But does adultery always lead to divorce? No. But it does threaten it. We live in a society that no longer fixes anything. If you think something's broken, you don't work on it. You don't try to find somebody who can help restore it. You just throw it away and buy a new one. Or get a new one, a better one. And it seems that applies whether it's a toaster, a car, or a marriage relationship. It seems to me that the people of Jesus' day had a similar attitude. They looked at divorce as a helpful loophole to get them out of a marriage that they were no longer happy in. And it's okay as long as you do the paperwork right. A little bit further on in Matthew's gospel, a Pharisee asked Jesus, he says, well, is it lawful for a man to divorce his wife for any and every reason? In Matthew 19:3. And from Jesus' response, he says, no, that's not the way God planned it at all. It was only allowed because of your hard hearts. So Eugene translates verse 31. He says, too many of you are using divorce as a cover for selfishness and a whim, pretending to be righteous just because you're legal. Of course, another loophole I hear all too often, he says, if divorce is so bad, so hard to get out of, you know, why bother getting married? Why not just live together? You know, nobody ever says, oh, I'm living in sin these days, unless it's a joke. You know, why bother getting married? Now, who needs a bit of paper? Well, have a think about it. What constitutes marriage in God's eyes? Is it a bit of paper? Or is it sexual union? Is it moving in together? You know, in which case, de facto marriage is marriage in God's sight. So whether you have a wife or a partner or a husband is not really any different. And in fact, in Australia's legal code, it has exactly the same standing. And in many cases, it's harder to deal with because there is no clear start or finish. The only difference is that marriage requires you to make formal vows, to make formal covenant or a commitment to each other, while the de facto couple just doesn't quite get around to it. I must say that while in working for defence, I had some of the COs I worked for quite well organised, that if a couple came to him asking for permission to go down that track and become a de facto couple and then get a married defence married quarter, he had the power and authority. There were some constraints that he had to work within, but he could just say, "Yeah, yeah, go. Yeah, you provide evidence that you've cohabited for 90 days. You've done this, this, and this. That's okay." But I got educated some COs to say, "Well, yes, you've got all the legal requirements here, but I need you to go and see the padre as well." And I would talk to them about the fact that just because you're going into a de facto relationship because you're prepared to do anything to get out of the barracks, this is marriage and you need to think seriously about this. And I would actually get them to do the preparing course for marriage, because I noticed that many of these de facto couples go really well for the first 12 months. Somewhere around 18 months to 2 years, the wheels fall off because they'd never even talked about what marriage meant, what the long-term repercussions were, having similar aims and goals in life, etc. Did I turn two pages at once? Or did I just... Yeah, that's marriage. Because that's where we need to go. The third section of this message is all about the vows and oaths. They are very important to making a lasting marriage. In my almost 40 years of ministry, I've done a lot of weddings. Now, I don't know how many I've done. And part of me wonders, I wonder how many of those ended in divorce. I don't know. I haven't got a way to check. And I'm not sure I want to know, really. I've worked with lots of couples who have come to me with problems and helped them to start communicating and thinking about the bigger picture. Trying to help couples to work out what they're promising to do in a relationship or what they did promise when they were married. And how does that apply to the situation they're in today? The fact is, no matter how good the vows sound, the essential element is that they recognise they're making promises not just to another person, but with God as their witness. And these days it seems that people no longer honour their vows. They do them in an offhanded way. And when things get hard, they don't care that they've made a promise. Just as I've fallen in love, I've fallen out of love. Therefore, those promises don't apply anymore. Instead of promises to work things out, they'd rather just bail out. So, the people of Jesus' day also made awesome promises that sounded good. Jesus says, get real. They sound good. Oh, you're promising on the basis of Jerusalem, or on the temple. Oh, but if you're not promising on the gold in the temple, it doesn't count. Oh, I made a pinky promise. What on earth does that mean? But Jesus is saying all these things, making a promise on the basis of your head. He said, you can't even change one hair white or black, although these days we can. It's just meaningless. What's Jesus saying? Communication is the key to a successful, long-lasting marriage. It's about saying what you mean and meaning what you say. My mate Eugene says, you do not make your words more true by embellishing them with religious lace. In fact, he goes on to say, when you do, it becomes less true. What is required is openness and honesty, not allowing the evil one to use loopholes and smoke screens to convince you that you can manipulate your partner to get what you want. Or are you simply staying true to the promises that you made, till death do us part, which will require you to work hard, working through the hard times that come in every relationship. Now, it's a pretty heavy message, but I'm just relating what Jesus said. Watch out for the warning signals. If your eyes are wandering, you need to take action before you betray your promises, which will threaten your marriage. Adultery is not automatically the end of your marriage, but divorce is also not a legal loophole to sidestep your responsibility as a partner or to your partner. Divorce was never part of God's plan, and it does signify the end of a marriage, but it is never painless. Sadly, many well-meaning Christians have shunned divorced people in the past when they're most in need of help. Jesus never did that. Look at John 4, and he talks to the woman at the well in Samaria who'd had 5 husbands, wasn't married to the bloke she was living with. But did Jesus condemn her? No. He offered her hope in very down-to-earth terms. In fact, much clearer than he ever offered his disciples at that stage. And finally, watch your words. Say what you mean what you say, keep your promises. And through that, you can build a lasting marriage.